Do you happen to find that picture of my grandpa that's separate than that thing? Can't find that? I wanted to show you my grandpa when he's young. He's kind of handsome. Not as handsome as that man out there with fish. That was a hunk of burning love. Oh, yeah. Oh, thank you. My grandpa. Isn't he cute? Isn't he just cute? But he really was a handsome man when he was young. But he was the cutest little grandpa. He could do this little shuffle with his feet, you know, to entertain us. That was so sweet. We'd beg and beg and beg and wear him out with that. When he was young, I'm going to tell you two stories here. I do love stories. And you can up me one if you want, but I'll try again to up you. My daddy, now this is a different grandpa. It's my children's grandpa. But my daddy, he was, that's where I got rebel. That's why I'm a rebel, is my daddy. But when he was a boy, his father contracted TB. And it's the reason we were so poor was because my dad's dad had 7 children. The first 4 were all boys. And the last 3 were little girls. Well, those 4 boys, the first one died in World War I. The second one came home from World War I but had shell shock. And he stayed in the veterans home for the rest of time. The third one has the malady of our family, which is Asperger's, what is that word? Autism. I can't even remember it, and we have it. He was autistic. So my dad was the 4th boy, and when Grandpa Puckett, when he contracted TB, my daddy had to quit school in the 8th grade and go to work for the family. So he had the brother that was autistic and 3 little girls and his mom and dad to provide for with an 8th grade education. Okay, now that was just a little bit hard. So I have a picture of this grandpa and his family, and it's this nice house and everybody has the... They're dressed to a T in their pretty shoes and the pretty furniture and everything's pretty. And I have the picture of my daddy's family. And there's a shack that you can see through the boards in the wall. And you can see under the porch, the dogs are laying there. And they've all got their overalls on and one has the one strap down. And boy, what a contrast in those two families. But daddy, he did that and he worked, but he got a little resentful and he left the church. Now, his family were members of the church, but he left the church because he just got resentful. And he was known to ride his motorcycle and go to bars. And he would get into little fights at the bars. And then when those 3 girls grew up and they got married, and his brother went to California and actually married, all of a sudden, it was his mom and dad, and he could do a little bit better, just a little bit. And he was 30. He had worked until he was 30, from 8th grade up. And he got to thinking maybe he ought to do a little better. Maybe he's tired of all the resentment and all the anger. And maybe he could even have a gal now. So he repented. He went to church and he repented. But my grandpa was a little cautious, as you might think, because of his reputation. My mother had had polio and she had club feet. But she went to my daddy's singing class. And she called him Mr. Puckett because he was her teacher. And he got to asking around and said, was that hereditary? I don't think he used that word, but that's what he meant. Would the kids have feet like that? And the man said, well, no, she had polio. It's okay. So Daddy got to kind of putting some glances her way. And she kind of got to putting some glances back. But he was 11 years older than her. He was just now then getting to think about this, and she was just graduating high school. So she was 18 and he was 29. Right, looking at 30, fixing to be 30 any minute. And they talked to Grandpa, who said, no, 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 no. Oh, no. 11 years older, with that reputation, no, 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 no. Oh, but they already had that cloud over them where they couldn't hear or see anything. And they eloped. Ooh, they did. They eloped. Well, now that dad of mine, he still needed to support his mom and dad. So my mother had to understand that she was going to have only half of what he made. And he didn't gain any more education. He still had that eighth grade education. So they had real hard times. But the times that this story was going on in that dirt floor farmhouse, well, he had been working one farm as a tenant farmer and then working a second farm as a tenant farmer. And he was trying so hard to get ahead to buy his own farm. That was his idea. And a man stepped up to him and said, Cecil, if you'll move in this here farmhouse and put in plumbing and put in irrigation for the fields and fix her up, put a floor in it, well, then you can have that as down payment on the farm and it'll be yours. Sound like a pretty good deal, right? Well, it wasn't in writing. And he got all that done. We worked. Everybody worked. We worked so hard. And the little plants were just coming up pretty. And that man sold that farm right out from under him. And Daddy didn't say a word. We didn't know why we were moving. All the trucks lined up. All the friends got all our stuff and took us to a different place. And that was that. Said goodbye to that farm. Well, I thought it's an adventure. I didn't know. Daddy never said a negative word about it. Mother never said a negative word about it. Until I already had four children. My daddy was dead. And I went and found my mother crying in her bedroom. And I said, Mama, Mama, what in the world? How can I help? And she said, oh, I went to a funeral today, and I'm so ashamed. And Mama was white-haired and old. I couldn't imagine her being ashamed. And I said, what is it? What is it? And she said, your daddy never would let us tell what that man had done to him. But she said, my dear, I was curious today. I resented that I could never talk about that. And I went to that man's funeral. There was nobody there. His wife was there, and the funeral director was there, and his business partner was there. But his children didn't even come. She said, Dad, do you remember your daddy's funeral? And I said, yes, ma'am. The auditorium at Broadway Church of Christ was filled. That auditorium can seat 3,000. And it was filled. And the Christian college choruses, there were two of them, and they got up on the risers that he had made with his hands and sang. And the baseball players came in their uniforms because he had made their dressing rooms. And the basketball team came in their uniforms to show the same homage. And Daddy's children were the pallbearers, our husbands, and we. And we carried him out. And Mother said, today, I know who was the rich man and who was the poor man. And I am so ashamed. But your daddy knew all the time. Now, how's that for a story? You like that one? Okay, now I'm going to tell you a sad one. This is about my grandpa again. We're going to go back to grandpa here. Now, I wanted to show you this neat picture of him because, oh, he was a striker. But my grandpa, now, you can't tell it by us. We don't show our Cherokee very well. But he was a quarter Cherokee, and my grandmother was a quarter Cherokee, so that together made their children still a quarter Cherokee. Right? Instead of dividing one more time, it's still a quarter. Okay. They didn't get anywhere, did they? They're still a quarter. There was some speculation on that because he was an orphan. I went back on Ancestry.com. Y'all ought to play on that a little bit, see what you find. That's kind of fun. But I went back on there, and I was discovering when I brought up the census that one year Grandpa was with his family, and the next one came around, and Grandpa was missing. And I thought, well, where'd he go? Where was he? So I got to looking amongst other Campbells and other censuses from that time to see if I could find a Charlie Richard Campbell. And sure enough, he had been borrowed by his uncle, who had all little girls, and his family had boys. So he was borrowed to work the field for all those little girls. And it was on the Cherokee Reservation. So Grandpa spent some time on the Cherokee Reservation. Well, the very next census, the family was dismantled because grandmother and grandfather died in it. My great-grandmother and my great-grandfather died in some kind of tragic accident, which we don't even know what exactly it was because he never talked about it. But here's what Grandpa did. He left the reservation, went to the funeral, and then headed straight to Texas, which is why I talk like I do. And in Texas, he began to jump up on rooftops and do people's roofs. And whenever he would managed to save enough money, he would send for the next brother. And then they'd both work on the rooftop until they could send for the next one. And he got all his siblings back together again. And then they became this clan. I guess you'd call it a clan. Only all these youngins wanted a mate. So Grandpa, with his Bible, went to studying with the girls they were interested in. And he converted all the ones they were going to marry, including my grandmother. And then my grandmother had a brother and a mother, and she was a spitfire. I guess I got a little bit of that there too. But he converted them, and they lived with him. They became part of the clan. And they would travel into a town and buy a plot of land, probably a cheap one, had to be, and they would begin to build a home. But before they did, they'd live out of a covered wagon and things around it, you know, sleeping bags, I guess you'd say, whatever those things were, bedrolls. And they'd just sleep like that. I don't know what the women did. Maybe, I have no idea. But they'd build a house as quick as they could. And they'd started church building. And there was enough of them that when they were singing outside on a Sunday morning and having their Bible study, well, folks just kind of joined. They kind of just came to see what was going on and sit, and they would listen to Grandpa talking about the Word, spreading the message, telling the gospel. And it would grow into a congregation. And by the time they got that church building completed for them to worship in, well, they'd find them some elders amongst them. And they'd leave it in a good situation and move to the next town and do exactly the same thing. Now, as that went on, there was young'uns born to this group. They did it 13 times. There are 13 churches that my grandpa built in Texas and started those congregations. So we're talking about a very wonderful man. He loved people. All seven of his children were Christians, but he began to worry about their mates as they got older. And my daddy being one of them, he studied with all of them. He accepted my daddy, you know, once he found out about the elopement. Why, he had them move to a room right behind the house that was nice. And my mother, who was 18, barely out of high school, couldn't cook. And she so wanted to impress my daddy's family that she had my grandmother cook for her, but stay in that kitchen up there, and she'd run and get the food and run back. It was a while before they knew that wasn't her cooking. I think it's cute that as poor as my daddy's folks were, she was so concerned about what impression. I guess she just thought, well, with him being right at 30 and her being 18, that she had to do something a little more special. Can you imagine? Okay, well, now here we come to the actual story. Hello. This little 8-year-old girl, I said to my grandpa one day, he said, "Don't you just love God?" And I had to think on it. And we had, you know, talked about God and his majesty and everything, but I was having another little issue. And I said, "You know, Grandpa, it doesn't seem like God likes girls. So I don't know if I like them or not. You know, if you don't like me, you say he loves me, but he wants me to hush. And I have to be in submission. How come I can't do anything? Why does he not like girls?" I thought it was a perfectly honest, good question. And he said, "Oh, little Debbie," and here we go. "Let me tell you a little story. Okay, let's see if this thing works. Okay. You can read it as I talk. The first Easterners to settle in the West were a hardy breed. They came west to hunt, trap. They served as trackers, scouts, guides for later settlers. They faced the dangers of mountain lions, grizzlies, hostile Indians." Of course, that was part of my family. "Indians, famines, floods, and freezing weather. And they earned the name of mountain men." You've heard of mountain men, haven't you? Yeah. Look at it. Would you want to marry one of those? They went west alone with no families, no surprise to us. They were single men. Now, he kind of looks good under there. I'd like to work on him a little bit. But they were rough and dirty and unkempt and uneducated. You call them make-do men. They caught their own food, cooked their own food, made their own houses, made their own furniture. They trapped and skinned animals to trade for anything else they might want. Be honest, we couldn't have lived like that. Besides that, we don't have to. We got another way we can figure out to do these things. Some would say these men were uncouth. That's kind of nice. I could say some more things. One could say they were wild, rowdy, and uncivilized. He kind of looks like my ancestors. Contrast such men with the educated family men. Now, you can just picture the women had a part in the way those gentlemen looked. We kind of call those jack-a-dandies. The first wave of women were selfish. Remember, we're back to Grandpa always went selfish to unselfish, selfish to unselfish. They went west with that gold rush. They sold their bodies to get what they wanted. They were like the male counterparts, only if they were unrefined, crass, crude, and immoral. When the gold rush began, at the start of it, there was only 2% of those going west that were female. But by 1857, they were half of the pilgrims on the westbound train. Jealousy, possessiveness, fighting, murder, stealing, overall lawlessness. That was the Wild West. Now, the mountain men, when they'd been left alone and the women weren't there, they got along fine for over 100 years. It took that first wave of women going out there to create the disturbance. With the arrival of the women, they were incited to do more evil than they could have conjured up themselves. You add that sex to it, and we got it all going. Then they got tired of it, and they asked for male order brides. You heard of them? And with that wave, they got streets, schools, churches, and government. A more elevated, stable form of life. They even got statehood. The selfishness, that equaled lawless. That went toward lawlessness. That's where lawlessness comes from, selfishness. You have to be selfish first before you can disobey the law. And to obey the law, you have to go towards selflessness. That's what those two arrows were for on that chart of Grandpa's. If you're struggling to be unselfish, you're going toward God. If you're just thinking of yourself, you're sliding back down. A woman will encourage a man, either good or bad. Now, Grandpa said, you know something? The men by themselves can stay just the same all the time. Just steady as she goes, but they don't get anywhere. You just put a woman in there, and that's like a stick of dynamite. One way or t'other, they'll either make them all they can be and make them better, or lands, they will just flat mess up their life. And the ingredient that causes it is selfishness or unselfishness. So then, why did God put a lid on us? Think about that a minute. Why did He? This is saying what I just said. He put those pretty pictures in there for you. Oh, yeah. You remember Jezebel? Remember what she said? I'll get that land for you. You hear her with long fingernails? I'll get that lamb for you. She was something else. And did you ever know a Jezebel? Who would ever name their child Jezebel? Hey, we don't want our child to be named Jezebel. On the other hand, contrast that. Oh, yeah, look what he put there. The contentions of a wife are a continual dripping. That doesn't sound very nice. Better to dwell in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a contentious woman. That was written by a man. We didn't get to write the Bible, did we? A continual dripping on a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Whoever restrains her restrains the wind and grasps oil with his right hand. It pretty well describes us when we're hormonal. Of course, you know, we get hormonal once a month. They're hormonal every day. That's what I tell Dave. I wished you'd get off your hormonal. Now, here we got Queen Esther. Oh, do you love that story? It's a short enough book. If you hadn't read it recently, go home and read it. She put a lot of thought into her manipulations. Now, either group manipulates. You know, we think of manipulation as bad, but we can't say that because that's how we operate as women. We all manipulate our children every which day that they're alive. And we certainly get what we want from our husbands. We all know how to do it. But now, just look a minute. Just think about it. Nagging is the laziest way to get what you want, I ever heard tell of, and that's what those scriptures were talking about. It's just flat out lazy, and none of us want to be nagged. Oh, that's just ugly. But she didn't nag. She was unselfish in putting herself before the throne, hoping for that scepter to come out to her. And then the only thing she asked for was that he come to dinner. Oh, wait to a man's heart. And she primped and primped and she made that dinner and she laid it all out there. And he came and he enjoyed himself. We know because he said, I'll give you up to half my kingdom. Why, I think he was a little impressed. But she must have been shy. She must have thought, And she was humble. She said, well, all I want is for you to come back tomorrow night and we'll do it again. Okay, this lady, she knew how to work it. So she has him back a second night, and he's more than thoroughly impressed. She must have shined like a new penny. And he said, I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. And she just pretty well told him that she just wanted her people to get to live. She wanted to be able to live herself. Not too much to ask. And he said, who would do this? And, you know, she'd invited Haman. And he was sitting there squirming in his seat. Wouldn't have wanted to have been in his place then. He'd been so awful proud. And what is pride, by the way? Selfish. You can look at any of the things we describe people as, and you can either put them as an unselfish attribute or selfish attribute. So we're trying to shed the ones that are selfish. So we need to shed the pride that makes us not want to go to our neighbor and teach them the gospel, the pride that makes us not want to help the person with a flat tire, the pride that wants us to shun the person that's maybe smells a little bit or isn't dressed and attired the way we think we want to be seen with them. That's pride, and it's false, because inside is what God sees of us. Inside. And it's got to go. It's got to go, sisters. It's got to go. There's no room for the unselfishness if you're burdened with pride. Let it go. Esther was humble. And she manipulated him where he could be proud of himself. And Haman hung on his own gallows. Now, Grandpa, he got to going on that. He was saying to me, she found a way to help the king through a situation that needed to be corrected. He knew nothing of it. She had knowledge he didn't have. And she took the time to make her point in an appealing rather than to nag. And you know the story of Abigail? You can find that one in 1 Samuel 25. Go back and refresh your mind if you hadn't seen that one in a while. That one's worth reading too. She had a prideful, arrogant husband. And when King David was out trying to get food for his army, he had his men to protect this wealthy man and his sheep while he was shearing them. And the man's return was, I'm not going to feed your army. I didn't ask you to protect me. And King David he wasn't king yet. He was king in waiting, whatever you say. He was a little angered over that. And Abigail, the wife, heard of it and thought, uh-oh, that was kind of a whoops on his part. That's an army out there. So she gathered together and gathered together and gathered together and put it all on donkeys and brought it to him. And then, listen, she prostrated herself in front of him for her husband. Not for herself. He wouldn't have seen her. For her husband. That's selfless, right? And then her husband died, not by David. God struck him, and David married her. That's how that one turned out, right? That's another story to show you how we can work things for our husbands. Now, Grandpa's point to me was, he made us as helpmeets. Have you ever known anyone to be able to help somebody if they couldn't do it better? Now, think about it. It's a secret. It's just between us gals. But if we can't do it better, we're not in position to be a helpmeet. So he made us that way. We have that capability, but then he thought, those women will run all over those poor little men. So he had to put a lid on it. He made us to make them all they can be. We have the capability to make them shine, to shine them up and make them pretty, to shine them up and make them be able to do things they wouldn't have done on their own. We can do that if we're not worried about ourselves. If we put our emphasis on our babies and our husbands, we have fulfilled our helpmeet responsibilities, but it also, what he made us, the interesting thing is that's the only way we'll be happy. That's the blessing of it. If we do it good, if we do it unselfish, we get the peace that passes understanding. It seems like, well, that wouldn't be any fun to give everything to them, but somehow or another, it just is. And I can promise you, as an old lady, I get such respect from my children and my husband that it's downright embarrassing. And I wouldn't take to be one of you gorgeous young things again for any amount. Because it's better to be appreciated and respected for the life you lived than to be standing in front of it respected for just prettiness. That goes, I promise you, that goes. Way too soon. A unique, specialized role, specially suited for him. The Creator made us that way, special to help him. And they look to us, if we handle it correctly, they look to us. If we're running roughshod over them, they won't. If we're competing with them, they won't. But if we approach it in a way that is modest and humble and meaningfully unselfish, they will return such respect and put you on such a pedestal it just embarrasses you to death. Papa called Sonova and Leslie and was telling them, she needs to be in the bed. Don't let her out of the bed because she fell. It's so silly. You think I stay in that bed? We are not to take the role of a man, not because we couldn't do it better. Of course, he doesn't say that up there because it's a secret. But not because we couldn't do it better. And sometimes we can see how things are done and we think, now if I'd done that, we'd have this and we'd have that. And it probably would be better. No doubt it'd be better. However, we have the capability in the extreme, but we need to tone it down, ladies. Now, let's just put this in. Let's just think through this for a minute. Now, Grandpa didn't tell me this, but I can think a little bit on my own. If we got up here in front of the men and ran the service all the time, where would they be? Back row. And then after a while, don't even bother. Isn't that right? We don't want them to be run like that. We don't want to run them off just because we're doing it better, just because they don't seem to have a take their job away from them. We're going to make them capable. We're going to make it a success. We're going to make them shine. Oh, yeah. And then we're going to sit back and think, yeah, I did that. Because pretty much we did. Remember the difference between the way the men looked in the West and the way they looked back East. Yeah, that shining up thing, we can do that pretty well. Match the ties and the shirts and shine them up as good as we can. Yeah. Okay, let's get on to it. Yeah, it doesn't have anything to do with physical strength. We really couldn't have done what they did. I mean, sometimes I like think I can because I can build a house. But it had to be a safe area and I have to have all the power tools. They didn't have anything and they could do it. You know, that physical strength, that's what we like to use. But when we manipulate them, we're wanting to borrow their strength to get done what we thought of in the way we thought of it, don't we? We know what they're good for. Yeah, we need them around. Yeah? It's not what they need from us. How do we fulfill that role? We will either be and teach selfishness or unselfishness. That's the point there. All right. Now we've got to be careful about which one we pick. We don't want a player. That's what my grandkids call it, player. This is fixing to come out. My son wrote it. I raised him on Grandpa's lesson, and he's able to put it into book form. This form of it is how to find a good one, basically. And it comes down to this. Marry Christian, but a faithful Christian, but an unselfish faithful Christian. Not just one. You got to layer it. Now, how can I tell? See, just going and sitting in the pew does not mean he's a faithful Christian. You got to observe for a while. And not just what they want you to observe. Because they can be sly as we can. And we know how to be. Yeah. Get counsel from others. You know, the old ladies, I like to think if the young men will come to me, I'll tell them a thing or two before they get in a mess. And same thing goes for young ladies. Those older gentlemen know a thing or two, and you ought to get counsel from them. You know, in Proverbs it says, a wise person seeks counsel from many. Well, that's not just said idly. Those are God's words, and that's good advice. The men can see things about boys, and the women can see things about the girls that no one else can. The witnesses, they've spent time. Things can be covered for a while. You can make yourself look good for a while, but eventually, when hard times come or when something comes up, you show your real self. You show who you are. You're trying to sort out who's selfish and unselfish. And there's reasons for that. We're fruit pickers, by the way. That's what we are. We're fruit pickers. You can see by the fruits. You know, an apple tree, when it doesn't have its leaves yet, looks a lot like a pear tree. Looks a lot like a cherry tree. But when the fruit comes, you have no doubt which one you got. So that's the example that's given in the Bible for us to be fruit pickers. So you want an unselfish person, you got to wait long enough to see the fruits of what they're doing. Now why? You know, sometimes the prettiest ones can be the most self-centered ones, the most puffed up, prideful ones. And what's the problem with that? Well, try to have an argument with one and see who wins and see who wants to make up. You always have to give in to the prideful person, don't you? And you want to live with that? A prideful person might look pretty in the first place, but it's awful hard to get along with them. You basically have to give in all time. Now, some people think they can change a person. But that's just foolish. That's just plumb foolish. Get that out of your brain right now. It's gone. You cannot. Now you can encourage. You can inspire. You can plead. You can beg. And they can choose. God gave them that spirit that's like Him. They can choose to repent, to better themselves, to change. But do not go into a relationship thinking, oh, I can change that. Whoever told you you could change that, don't even listen to that person. Right? Say amen. You hear that? You hear that, children? All the older ladies are telling you amen. That means something. It means that's right. All right, prayer. Do not forget to pray. If you've been doing what you ought to do, He'll hear you and He'll know to give you the one in due season that you ought to have. Look for an unselfish mate. Can they say they're sorry if they're selfish? Can you even have an argument if you're both unselfish? Arguments come from somebody or both being selfish. That's the only way it can happen. Now you can have a misunderstanding and you can talk it out. But when it gets into an argument, that means somebody being selfish somewhere. Help them become better people and grow. All right. When it says, accept me just like I am, think about that again now. Because what is repentance? Everybody can change because there wouldn't be such a word as repent if there wasn't ability to change ourselves. Ourselves, not somebody change us, ourselves. When Grandpa talked to me, I had to choose for myself to get it right. You know, and the concept of add to your faith, knowledge and to your knowledge. That's talking about as we change and grow. So don't give in to that, just accept me like I am business, because what you're saying is, I don't want to grow. I don't want to get any different. I don't want to be better. Just accept me like I am, selfish and immature, and be happy with it. Now, that's not good. Okay, we're going to talk about rearing children. Can we talk? Can we just talk? I especially want to talk to these youngsters who haven't had their kids. Because Grandpa's lesson will give you the key to that too. Behind everything that there is about the Bible is what God gave us. It all comes down to unselfishness. All of it. If you want to understand God, the Bible, marriage, children, relationships with people, how to get along better in your job, how to have manners, how to obey the laws, how to make a success of yourself and your husband in life, it all comes down to selfish versus unselfish. It always comes back to it. You can't lose if you're unselfish. We are the queens of the home. That's the place we get to shine. We don't get to shine where we're not the boss. We don't get to shine other places. We don't get to be the ones that shine in church. But in the home, we are the managers. We are the queens. The men, they are supposed to be responsible. I think it's so interesting, and always think of the fact that Eve took the fruit, but Adam was the first sin. The buck stops with the man. And so, you know, we got to respect that a little bit. We got to respect that. And he's responsible ultimately for the success of the children. It's his thumb that needs to be on that. But then he goes to work. Then he goes away. And then the women are stuck with it. And sometimes the men aren't even around. A lot. My dad wasn't. Let's talk about the manners. See these manners? Don't eat with your mouth full. Don't smack. Don't track dirt in the house. Ladies first. pick it up after yourself. If you make a mess, clean it up. You know, those are ones your mom's all taught you, right? And at the root, unselfishness. Okay, now, what's maturity? Have you thought about that? Is it a measure of what one should be at that age? I made that up. I think it's pretty good. I'm proud of that myself. You know, when you see some child acting just ridiculous, the way we think it's ridiculous is, well, by now they ought to be acting that way. Well, what is the way they're acting? Selfish. They're uncontrolled. They're out of control. They're just flipping out because they want you to do what they want them to do. Well, that's selfish. That all comes back to selfishness. And it applies at every age. It's just easier to see in an uncontrolled temper tantrum. But who wants to see an adult act in an immature fashion? Or have you ever had friends at school that it's hard to get along with because they're immature in the relationship with you? What are we saying? What is meant by immature? Selfish. Every time it's selfish. They're acting selfish. They ought to be, your parents should have trained you to be less selfish at each stage of your life. And if at any point they failed, they stopped training you, they let you train yourself, then you're going to end up with that selfish trait. And people are going to think you're immature. Respectful. It doesn't come natural. I know I had a lot of friends when I was raising my kids that seemed to think the genes will do it all for them. That if they had good parents, their kids would just be good and just left them to raise themselves. And then would be so surprised when they were just out of control. It comes from training and a healthy fear of punishment. And I said healthy. I don't mean abuse. I do not mean training is not abuse. You've seen people abuse animals and you've seen people train animals. I'm talking the same thing about in a home. You go about it with a plan. When we limit, train, and punish, we're training them to respect us and God and authority, teachers, elders, whoever. If we do not discipline, train, and punish, they will not respect. It's all about that. And self-control is another way of saying all of that. You have to get hold of yourselves, what my mother used to say. Get hold of yourself. I thought, how am I going to do that? It's self-discipline. It's not automatic without assistance. You know, you see a child out of control, you're thinking, give that child a little assistance or I can't run. You know, you turn and look, the parents say, you see them? You're just wondering, are you awake? Are you hearing your child? Do you think that child's just going to stop himself, maybe? What are you thinking? The rest of us see it. I wonder, do you see your child is out of control? See, this is not personal. I don't know any of y'all. This is nationwide. The children are out of control. Hello. That's what fly swatters are great for. When you see an adult out of control, you look back to the parents and think, man, you didn't do your job. Because the buck stops there. When it's happening now, you're looking for the parents. When it happens then, you're still looking for the parents. They didn't get the job done. Do you know if your child is acting unruly, people are looking at you? Did you not think about it? You can't. If you want to ignore it and act like that, nobody else is, and they're getting a reputation. A reputation. Say that three times. That's kind of fun. They will get a reputation that shames you. It shames you and you're just ignoring it. And people are thinking, don't want that child to come to my house. Don't want that child to play with my child. Don't you want your child to be adored? Well, whoop him sometime. might make him likable. How do we instill these qualities? So let's make a plan, shall we? Don't make too many rules. Now that's important, because you see the thing with rules is you got to carry them out. So if you make too many of them, you're making too big of a job for yourself. You know, you can put a little bit in there to think about yourself. I have a sister that has so many rules that it exhausts me to hear them. Truly, OCD, enforce the rules every time. A rule is no good if you ignore it yourself. If you don't respect your rules, they won't respect the rules. You got to enforce the rules. Every rule goes back to the motive. Why did you make the rule? How will it help my child in the future? How will it help my child to be the mature, wonderful, accepted, and loved person that I want them to be? The mannerly success in life. All right, that's what rules are for. That's what training is for. That's why you are getting a plan together ahead of time. There is a purpose for training your children. And it's why an old lady like me has the right, as the Bible says, to tell you younger ones, and even before you get the child, think ahead. Think ahead. Make the plan. Don't fly by the seat of your pants on this now. Don't do it. If the behavior is deliberate, that's when you punish. Let's say, okay, so what I mean? Every child starts growing longer fingers before they know they're longer. And they knock the milk off the table. Well, get down there and help them clean it up. Make them clean it with you. But help them. Don't yell at them. They can't help it that their fingers grew. But if a child looks at you and goes, well, that's something different. Get that fly swatter. And not just a little bit. And you got to make sure that attitude disappears. They can't be sticking their tongue out in the closet. Three positives. That's Grandpa's rule. Three positives to every negative. Three positives. That is exhausting. That was the hardest thing. And I didn't get it every time. I just got to tell you the truth now. I just didn't get it every time. But I did try when I had sense about me and I wasn't too mad. I thought about it and I made a rule for myself on disciplining. When I was mad, I sent them to their room and I sent myself to my room. And I thought about it and I prayed about it and I determined about it. And I came out and gave them their whooping. I wasn't mad anymore. I had thought through it until I decided, yes, this is for their good. Yes, they did this wrong thing. And yes, by Jiminy, this is what needs to be done. What is by Jiminy, God? I didn't just take the Lord's name in vain, did I? That's not, does that mean anything, Jiminy? I don't even know. I didn't mean to if that was it. Okay, so three positives. So let's put this into play now. Let's make our plan of action. Let's don't just fly again. It's not easy to not... Did I have that with it? It's not always easy not to be angry when he breaks something. One time, I bought some Avon figurines, and I wanted to make my daughter's room so pretty. And I put those figurines up there and on a glass... What do you call those little? It's cheap, but it had glass shelves. I had those little Avon figurines on there, little rabbits, I think. And I said, now then, those aren't to touch. Of course, she touched them, and they broke. And I sent myself to my room. She got the whipping when I thought through it. Not because she broke the pretty figurines that I had saved for, but because she disobeyed me. So that's why I needed to go and not be angry and think through what the punishment was actually for. So then I could come back out and explain to her first. The rule was already in place. She had been told clearly, and she disobeyed me. Now we'll glue it together. That'll be fine. All laws and manners, God's and man's, should be designed to promote self-control. So if you make a rule and you can't find a way that it goes back to that, that's not a good rule. Not a good rule. You know, not every law in the books is a good law. Laws are made to protect the innocent, and sometimes those lawmakers don't get it right. Well, we get to be the lawmakers in the home. And our husbands and wives can team up to do it if you've got a husband-wife team. If not, if you're alone, make the rules yourself to be wise and go back to unselfishness every time. It's never abuse if you don't do it for the wrong reason. We must commence to train children to listen as early as 6 months. Now, that might sound bizarre. It might sound bizarre, but I'm not spanking them with a fly swatter at 6 months. That's not what I'm talking about. Consider this. When does a child start to crawl? About 6 months. What's the first thing they do when they crawl around the room? Stand up to the table and touch what's there. So you think ahead. Now see, that's not anybody's picked out child. That's everybody's picked out child. So we know certain characteristics of all the children. They're going to touch what's not theirs. And it might be fine for us to let them touch our things, but they're going to go to other homes. And they're going to touch other things that aren't theirs that we don't want them to embarrass us about. So the training is in the home. So we think ahead. Now this child has started to crawl, and it's not just 3 steps on the floor. Now they're going a little further, and we know they're going to stand up that table, so we look at the table first. Well, we want 3 positives to every negative, so let's eliminate a lot of the things. And let's just pick out 1 no-no. Because they're learning the concept of a no-no. And put the no-no there, and what are they going to do? They're going to reach for the no-no, and we say gently, no, 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 no. And, of course, that means zero to them. So they reach for it again when you set it down. And this time we go, no, 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 no. And the tears flow and they look so surprised and you feel so horrible, right? You've seen it. But don't feel guilt over that, ladies. They're going to do that. Every child does. It's part of the training process. A dog will do it too when you train a doggy. When a child begins to go, I've already done that. Limit it so that there's more yeses. That's the other thing. Put a lot of toys around so that if you're having to tell them a no-no, you can put them right back down and say, yes. Yes, yes. See the yeses? You put on this and then get back up. No, yes, no, yes. It's exhausting. But you're going through the process of the first self-control in their life you get to be in charge of. You're shaping, you're developing, you're molding. It's a wonderful God-given responsibility. You're going to make this child where everybody loves it. Well, not everybody. Can't get that far. They didn't even love Jesus like they ought to. So, I mean, you know, we'll do the best we can. Prepare the training space. You know, like, say, if you got stairs, we're not going to address stairs right now, you say, so we'll put the gate up there. So that's out of the equation, you know. We got electric things. We're not going to address that. Stick something in the electric things, right? You're going to limit the no's so that you can train them where and what you want to train them. So you're planning ahead. They will touch what they see, yes. Okay, I've already said that. I get ahead of myself. See, now, and let me tell you something. The thumping of the hand is very effective. It's very effective. It doesn't hurt anything, but they recognize that that means no. See, so that's not abuse. You're not walloping anybody. But now, if they're a stubborn child, and some of them really are, I was, then those thumps need to get pretty downright thumpy. You've only restricted his behavior when he didn't want it restricted. And try to be emotionless. My daughter-in-law is the best of this. I have the most wonderful daughter-in-law. I wish you could meet her. Oh, she's just, oh, wonderful. But she spanks her children while she says, "Now, don't you be doing this. We just aren't going to have it." And I was like, "Don't you do this." And she's just so sweet about it. I'm so jealous because I didn't have that approach. Mine was a little bit more forceful. But she, you know, try to be emotionless. It really sounds sweet. Now, look at this child. That's me. That, it's not really me, but it's, I see the attitude, you know. She's attitudinal. You got that? You see it on the child's face when that child is just attitudinal. Now, that's got to be fixed. Don't just ignore that. Now, that's just not going to work. If she's attitudinal to you, she's attitudinal to her Sunday school teachers, her daddy, the people on the street. She's attitudinal. That's got to be fixed. Amen? And not going to work. Especially if we want them to represent Christ. Look at that one. I had to put a boy in here too. Can't just have a little girl. You know your discipline's been inadequate when you see that. You haven't got the job done. Wally, come back in here. You haven't got the job done. I know. They're everywhere. It's nationwide. That's why I'm talking it. That's why I'm talking it, because it really, it's our job. Don't ever let your child say no to you. I hear that all the time. That's disrespect to you. And it doesn't erase itself. You fix it. You want your child to respect you? Get the fly swatter or the Lowe's paint stick. It works equally well. Swat that fat bottom. That's what it's put there for. Don't let them say no to you. Ever. Ever, never. That's forever. Don't let them say no to you one time. No. No. You say no to me, I'll show you no. You are the parent. You're the parent, not them. They can't tell you no. You going to let them be the parent today? No. They're going to respect you. They must never backtalk you. Do you know what backtalk is? I know you older do. Never mind you. Y'all know what backtalk is. Or we called it sassing. I got lots for that. It's when your parents say, "No, you can't go to that." What? All the kids are going. That's sassing, back talk. You're disrespecting what they've said. You know, there's one command for a child in the Bible, and what is it? Hello? What? Okay, so now then, if you're sassing them, you've just lost the battle, child. That's the one command you had, and you blew it. Comes back to the parents to make it. Teach your child to respect you and other authority figures, all that. Now, how do I mean teach them? Hello. Sharing toys teaches them how to share in the world with others. Is that biblical? Is that unselfishness? Are all these rules unselfishness? Respecting your parents, wasn't that one of the Ten Commandments? Honor your father and mother. Okay, share your toys. What's that one about? Give and it'll be given to you. Turn the other cheek. Be generous with the strangers in your country. Whatever it is, it's about give. Okay. Whoop, how come? It came and went. Okay. Taking turns and sharing. This is chapter 2 of the same book. Now, if you can't make your child share, you've lost the battle of unselfishness. And I have a daughter that I watched put the best toys up when another child was coming. She said, but Mother, we saved and bought those and they'll get broken. I said, you better get that down out of that closet right now. Because you have lost the battle if you're hiding the best. God would teach you to give the best. If they get broken, oh well. That's what it's all about. And this business of making them think that, you know, that's part of the training. You know, one Christmas, my son and his cousin were at the mall. And they were playing video games, and my sister called me and said, now, Jeff kind of took over from his cousin because he's bigger. He kind of bullied him and didn't let him have a turn. I said, oh, I see. Well, Jeff, come here. You know that toy that you and I saved for all these months? It's got a new home today. It's going to your cousin, and he'll have a lot of turns. Right? He tells me to this day that impacted him so much. Because he had had to save so hard for whatever. Oh, I know, it was a double barrel slingshot thing that you could shoot with a gun and two rubber bands when it wants. He had to give that up. And you know, the funny thing is, my sister married a doctor and they had every toy under the sun. But that child, that cousin, still has that slingshot. It meant something to him too. He still has that slingshot gun. Yep. Ask before you touch. Why would that be unselfish? You see the rules? Don't take things not yours. Well, that's about stealing, isn't it? Why don't you pick that up? That's not yours. Put that back down there. There's fly swatter around. Make your child tell you the truth. Get to the bottom of it. Don't glaze over things. One of my young'uns came home and said that she didn't cheat. The teacher gave her an F on a test. I grabbed her hand and we went back up there and sat down in front of the teacher and I said, she said she didn't cheat. Teacher said, I watched her reach under her desk and peek at that paper and write. Twice. I looked over at my daughter and I said, that wasn't the story you gave me. And she said, she just doesn't like me. Is that likely? Some parents would think that's likely. I kind of have a kindness in my heart to teachers and think, she needed the fly water, and she got it. She still didn't want to admit it, so she got it again. She still didn't want to admit it, and she got it again until we got to the bottom of it. Sometimes, and that's not abuse, mind you, but she did actually have a bruise the next day on her bottom. It's not the end of the world. It's a fat bottom. Sometimes a blood vessel breaks. But we needed to get to the resolution of the matter. Now, if I'd done it in an angry, mean way because I was drunk or something just mean and selfish on my part, that would be abuse. I'm not talking about that kind of spanking. I'm talking about the motive. You always go for the motive. That child must never strike another. And then they say, well, when you spank them, you're teaching them to strike. Amazingly, I do not know how the Creator figured it out, but no, it's the opposite. You strike them in the right place in the right way, and they learn not to strike others. Don't know how that works, but promise you, it works. See that one law? Got that, kiddos? One law for you. Children shouldn't be baptized too early, in my opinion. It's just my humble opinion. But Jesus was 30. Okay, now we don't have to wait till 30, obviously. But when you bring a child before the courts, What do they say, even if 15? Where's your parents? Where's your parents? When you're taken to the school office, what do they say? Where's your parents? You can't vote till you're 18, and that's really too young. You can't drink, you can't smoke. Why do you think you need to take on the responsibility of an adult Christian? An adult Christian is responsible for every action all the time. They better know what they're getting into. But a child is to obey their parents, and the parents have to worry about it. Don't be in too much of a hurry. You're saved when you're under your parents. Now, when you get up in your 20s, you better think about it. But I don't mean that. I don't mean wait till it's past time. But, you know, 11 and 12, there's a rush to the baptistry because you figure out that you can die. Right at that age, you figure out that life ends. And you do it because you're scared. But you don't have to be scared as a young person of 11 and 12 years old. Your parents bear the responsibility. And your responsibility is to answer to them. Now then, I'm not saying that you did wrong if you were baptized. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying don't be in such a hurry. Don't be in such a hurry. Just get your... In fact, if you're going to go through the teenage years, and you're going to have an attitude sometimes, well, then you're a Christian, and you're answerable for that. You're taking on that responsibility of the attitude of the teenage years. Allow yourself to get straightened out and mature, and then take on the responsibility. Does that make sense? You know, the children that, wonder where that went to. The children that run up there too soon almost always want to be rebaptized later because they didn't really understand. Okay, now making the point again. Deliberate versus not. The attitude makes the difference. You know, when somebody murders somebody and it's forethought and they plan it and they get it all ready because they plan to murder that person, that's murder. But if you accidentally hit a child that runs out in the street, that feels horrible. That life ends just the same. But that's, what's that called? What's that word? Manslaughter. Okay, when a child deliberately does something or doesn't deliberately do something, you've got to take that into account. They're disciplined differently if they didn't mean to. In fact, you know, the only discipline you do for somebody that didn't mean to do it is help them through it. They need to clean up their own mess, right? See on that sorry, it says so sorry because the so is big. Isn't that cute? And look at that little one in the middle. I am sorry. They're masters of manipulation. Now, and don't be saying to me, well, my child is not like the other children. Heard that one a few times. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it away. I love that. Rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to who? Your mother. That's what I'm talking about. To save their lives and their souls. They derive security. You know, it's too much responsibility to be in charge in the household when you're a little kid. And when a kid runs the household because the parents aren't in control, you're making that child insecure. That is way too much responsibility. You train all through their life, and as they're older, then you add spanking, you know, those little ones. That as they get older, you'll know when that's not working anymore. The smarter the child, let me come at it from the backside so you get it. The smarter they are, the earlier you have to start. Don't give me my child's too smart. My child is special. If they're really smart, they're going to question everything and earlier. So you have to start earlier. You're looking for attitudes. Don't be misled. And never, never go to your room till you're not angry. Never do it in anger. Remember the procedure. You make the rule ahead of time. It's not fair to spank if they didn't know. Right? Would that be fair? Would you like to be spanked if you didn't know that was a rule? At the time of the violation, restate it again. Remind them. Now, we made this rule and we talked about this rule. Now, you get the discipline. And when they're old enough and they're talking, which indicates you're starting spanking before they're even talking, and I certainly did, when they're able, you make them state the rule back to you. Now, why did you get that whipping? What happened? And they don't want to tell you, oh, they don't want to take responsibility. That's why they need to. They need to know it was a rule so they can't say later, well, I didn't know. And every time, I'm saying this over and over, it's fair and just. That will make them resent it less if they know ahead of time, and it's every time, right? Okay, there's the big one. You know parents that count. Now, don't be offended if you're a counter. Just listen at me. Listen at me a minute. It's procrastination. It means it's a coming, but I don't want to deal with it. And if I count, maybe I won't have to. But the smart child, again, the smart one, just goes, okay, how many times we get three? Okay. I'm going to wait for three. I keep doing it to the last minute. It teaches him to disrespect what you've told him, the rule, because you're putting it off and he's putting it off. Everybody's putting it off, and that's disrespect. And then if it comes to the street and you're saying, stop, Johnny, stop. Are we going to count? He's a running. And he's dead. Oh, that's not a good time for the parent to learn a lesson, is it? Well, my dad said it, and it was a woodshed. First time. Every time. These are our ways we can handle discipline. You can either just ignore him and let him rear himself and be embarrassed at the consequences, and in the teenage years finds out that he'll say, he hates you. I just hate you. You want your child to say that to you? Do you know the ones who let the children do what they want get that? Because you haven't taught them to respect you. I just hate you. Well, no mother wants to hear that. She thinks if she's so sweet to him and gives him what he wants that he'll be her friend. No, he'll disrespect you and tell you he hates you. React every time by the seat of your pants, which means, I feel like it today, I don't feel like it today. I feel like it today, I don't feel like it today. And the child is hoping for the days that you don't feel like it. And they're disrespecting you because they might get the day that you're not going to tackle it. So that inconsistency is teaching them that they might get away with it and it's worth a try. You're not going to get the job done that way. Or you plan ahead on biblical principles and it's a logical, loving approach. Okay, enough of that. If we know the law is good, use it lawfully, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous person. Okay, that's what we're ending with. Laws aren't made for righteous persons. They don't need the law. They're loving. We want those children to be loving too. And Grandpa, he's a good old guy. Thank you. The lesson is yours.